It is my pleasure to be here today. Pastor Dan asked me a while back if I could take a day to come up, and I'm always happy to go and visit other churches. I am part of the Summit Center of the seminary, and we'll be doing some consulting and stewardship programs and then doing tax and legal seminars for churches throughout the country, actually. Tax is my background. My first job was as an IRS agent. But I left there long ago, so don't hold that against me. I then went to a CPA firm. I am a CPA. That's my background, not a preacher. So you'll be a little bit disappointed in the morning service, probably. But you get back to that next week. And then I spent the last 19 years before moving to the Summit Center as the Director of Finance Administration for Calvary Baptist Church, which is the founding organization of the seminary. So that's where I am. And I got a younger guy there to take my place now. He can deal with all that stuff. But just a little thing, as I went through IRS training, I want you to just go through this little exercise with me. You can do it on your outline if you've got a pencil, or if you have a good mind. Let's just go through something, and we'll show you how they operate. I want you to pick a number from 1 to 10. Pick any number from 1 to 10. Multiply that number by 9. You have a number. Add the digits together. Come up with a new number. From that total, subtract 5. You have another number. Convert that number to a letter of the alphabet. If that number is 2, that's a B. Convert that number to a letter of the alphabet. You have a letter. Pick a country, the name of a country, that starts with that letter. Think of a large animal which starts with the second letter of the name of that country. And then think of the color of that animal. How many have a gray elephant from Denmark? Anybody? Okay. Good. All right, so don't lie to IRS agents. They sort of can. It's just a numbers thing. Anyway, during the morning service, we're going to talk specifically about stewardship. But Pastor Dan did ask me to talk about budgeting and debt in the ABF session. So that's what we're going to talk about. You know, it's always a touchy subject when you talk about money. It's uncomfortable for many people. It's uncomfortable for many pastors. I know our pastor at Calvary doesn't feel real comfortable about talking about money, although when he does a great job, because it looks self-serving. But the Bible says, preach the whole counsel of God, so you have to do it. And I know Pastor Dan has been doing that as a prelude to Stewardship Sunday, or whatever today is. But when you look at the budgeting process, there is biblical support for it. Planning is an act of stewardship. You can look at the parable of talents, Matthew 25, 14 to 30, and not to get through all that, but it is partly planning. And there's rewards for those who plan properly, and there's punishments for those who don't. And then in Luke 14, 28, it talks about building a tower and making sure you have sufficient funds to finish it. That could be a tower in the Old Testament. It could be a house in the New Testament, whatever it might be. And then in Proverbs 24, verses 3 to 4, through wisdom is a house built, and by understanding is established, and by knowledge shall the chambers be filled with all pleasant and present, precious and pleasant riches. It is important for us as Christians to be able to plan properly, and budgeting is part of that. Now, will I say emphatically that everyone has to have a written budget? In fact, I'll get a budget worksheet, which I brought with me that I failed to copy, that I use in counseling. It's just a simple one-page sheet. Does everyone have to have a written budget? No. If you're good with numbers, if you can keep it in your head, that's fine. However, if you're married and it's in one person's head and not the other, I think you need a written budget. You need some guideline. So you can't have mental telepathy and think you know what your spouse thinks what the budget is, because the budget for the man is going to be different than the budget for the woman, because the man's going to go buy the rifle, whether or not it's in the budget, if he wants it, if he's a hunter, or whatever he might do. And the woman has completely different ideas. So we'll get to the budgeting process later, more specifically, but we do have to first evaluate, before you set up a budget, what your needs are. 1 Timothy 6:8, having food and raiment, let us therewith be content. The biggest problem that anyone has in dealing with budgeting is what are your needs versus wants versus your desires? And that's a tricky thing to do because it's very subjective. And it really does require prayer on the part of a couple if you're married. And what are the wants? Matthew 6:33 says, seek ye first the kingdom of God, his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Luke 3:11 talks about having a coat and giving it to a brother in need, or having meat and sharing that meat with a brother or sister in need. So there's a lot of wants here, and there's a lot of things that you need to do. And then there's the desires, and that's what really gets us into trouble. Love not the world, neither things that are in the world, for the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but of the world. 1 John 2:15 and 16. We have desires. We all have desires that we want something, or maybe we're entitled to something that we really don't have. Or we look around at other people and say that, why do they have it? Get that all the time. I've done a lot of counseling over the years, and we can get our eyes off of ourselves real quickly. And I found out, I was a Catholic until I was age 33. I got saved when I was 33. And I became more aware of material things after I became a Christian. And I was a CPA working in CPA firms. Not that, you know, I wasn't making good money. But when you started the so-called fellowship thing, which I never had before. In fact, I always thought it was an odd term. When someone once invited us, says, yeah, when you want to come over to our house for fellowship, it's like, what on earth is that? I didn't know whether that was a dessert or what it was. But Catholics don't use the word fellowship, and they don't fellowship. When Mass is done, you're out, if not before then. So anyway, this whole idea of fellowship was an anomaly to me. And I found out that as you go into other people's homes, you become more covetous. Well, their home's bigger than yours. And, you know, well, I think I make more money than they do. Why shouldn't I have a house like this? And I found out that the comparison through the fellowship process seemed to make things worse, not better. So that was something that I never experienced before. But it is something we all deal with. What is our need? We need to develop an awareness of our financial position or where you are. I often counsel people, even Wednesday night, counseled someone who had what I thought was serious financial problems. They really thought they were serious financial problems because their credit was just destroyed. But when you looked at it, it was a combination of about $3,000 of consumer debts. And sometimes people don't know where they are, or they're not in as bad a condition as they think they are. Now, sometimes they're in a worse position than they think they are as well. But you need to develop awareness of where you are. You need this roadmap. That's why a written budget helps. It eliminates overspending the budget. I remember my wife saying to me one time, you know, when I do the bills, and we'll talk about how we do bills later on, when I do the bills, I have a tendency to spend less. Well, I gave her the bills. It's not that she spends a whole lot of money, but when you're involved with the process, it makes you more aware. It establishes your order of priorities because you see what's more important. It expresses your goals in writing. It's an agreement between you, your spouse, and God when you have a written plan. And it reflects your spending patterns. You can go through your checkbook for the last year and find out where your priorities are. I would say your checkbook talks, and it will write a story about you. Some other considerations as you look into the budgeting process. You need to set specific goals for home, education, children, savings, retirement. Those things are better done earlier than later. You need to avoid comparison budgeting. Living within your means, not the Joneses, or whoever else is in your church, you like to use that name. Not your relatives, not your friends. I see people, I also do tax returns on the side. That's been my background. And, you know, some people inherit money. Some people have trust that they live on. And they may have a modest income, but they can live a higher standard of living because they have these other funds. Well, that's not something you know with your coworker sitting next to you that makes the same money you do, and you say, well, why is this house so big? I deserve that. Well, you don't know their individual circumstances, so you can't compare yourself. You need to be willing to sacrifice to balance your budget if you have a problem. You need to consider all income as joint, even if only one spouse works. I've seen a lot of problems there where if there's a housewife who's staying home taking care of the children, which is a job, where the husband would deprive her of a share of the income because she's not working. Well, that's wrong. Regardless of how much each spouse makes or whether one makes none and one makes a lot, it's joint income. Even under IRS terminology, it's joint income. You're filing a joint return. But it is really important. I remember counseling a family They were both into second marriages. His wife died of cancer, and she was divorced. They were in our church for a while. I like going out to churches because I can use illustrations for my counseling because nobody's here from the church. But anyway, they came in. He was an engineer. And I usually bring this with me and read it, and I forgot to take it. But he was an engineer, and they both had children. She had younger children at the time. They were 8, 9, 10. He had older children. He was a little bit older than her. And they were 18, 19, 22. One was out of college. One was in college. They were older. And he had this spreadsheet, like engineers do. They're worse than accountants, actually, when it comes to numbers, if you know what I mean, if you know any. He had the spreadsheet filled out, and they had a column. Her name was Jack and Jill, actually. I always have to change the names when I use illustrations, you know, especially if it's at Calvary. But there was a column Jack, column Jill. There was a column expenses Jack paid for Jill. There was a column that Jill paid for Jack. And then at the end of every month, they would total these, and Jill had to reimburse expenses paid on behalf of Jack. Jack had to reimburse her for expenses paid to Jill. And I looked at that, it's like, this is not a marriage. This is a business arrangement. And surprisingly, they're still married. I don't know how they do their finances. They're not members of the church anymore. That was very strange. But they really did separate their financial lives. And to me, it's a recipe for disaster. Now, hopefully they've changed and they're in a better position now. But you need to be careful. I've heard secular psychiatrists say, never have anything but a joint checking account or savings account. I'm not absolutely against that, but what I am against is my money goes in my account, your money goes in your account, and somehow we share. You pay this expense, I pay that expense. I just think that's a problem. Now, if it works for you, that's fine, but I just saw too many times where it's an issue. Base expenditures on current income, not projected income. You think you're getting a raise or you're getting a bonus, and you already have those things projected. Let that be in addition to, not something you've already spent ahead of time. Limit your debt to purchases of homes and cars and be cautious. I've seen many situations in counseling where the purchase of a car, when they really could not afford it, created problems. I had a couple, they're no longer married. They both bought new cars that they couldn't afford. And then the typical American car scenario is you can't even tell them to sell the car because it was now worth less than the loan value. And this was probably 15 years ago. So they're trapped. They have to satisfy the car payments. There's no way out of it. Had another situation where the husband insisted on buying a car. His wife did not want to. We didn't pray about it. He goes out and buys a car. He makes a late payment or two. Well, now it came time. They want to sell their home and move up to a larger home. So they signed an agreement for the purchase of a new home. In that part of that agreement, they did not have a contingency clause that this is conditioned on them getting financing for the new home. So what had happened, they had a negative credit. They were not able to get a mortgage because he had a couple late payments on a car loan. So what they had to do was sell their home because they were committed, live in an apartment for a year because they couldn't buy another home. And so they reestablished their credit. And now they were in an apartment that they had not intended, only because he insisted on buying a car, and they didn't pray about it ahead of time. Don't use a budget as a weapon against your spouse. This often happens, especially with the guys. And he will go out and buy the rifle without permission, but God forbid the wife would go out and buy the dress. There has to be agreement on how you spend the dollars that you're stewards of. Allow each spouse flexibility with discretionary spending without remarks from the other spouse or guilt. You should have some free spending money as a couple, whether the wife's working or not, or the husband's not working, whatever it might be. You really do need that flexibility. I mean, I've seen situations where the husband could go out and do any kind of discretionary spending he likes, but if his wife would go out with her mother, his mother-in-law that he didn't like, that became a big issue. Well, you spent $20 for lunch with your mother-in-law that we couldn't afford, but it was okay that he went out and spent something on his car or bought a car that we couldn't afford. So there needs to be some discretionary spending. Avoid impulse buying. Exercise discipline. Stay away from the stores which tempt you. Okay, I passed the Pep Boys today on the way in. That's my favorite store. Okay, that's what it is. I remember going to the Pep Boys one time and saying to my wife, buy anything you want. Okay. There was a Chevy block sitting there. It meant nothing to her. Control mystery cash. The ATM withdrawals, the Mac withdrawals, whatever we call them nowadays. I remember one time having to switch my Mac account. I lost my card or it didn't work, and it's like in that two-week period before, by the time it was replaced, I think I spent less money than I ever did. I remember not too many years ago where you had to go to the bank. There weren't Mac cards, and most people didn't even take checks. They didn't take personal checks. This is maybe 30 years ago. You start to date yourself. But, you know, on Friday night, you had to take out the money out of the bank that you expected to spend for the weekend. And when it was gone, it was gone. I don't know what people did that broke down with their cars. I mean, like, they didn't even have credit cards a whole lot 30 years ago. It was a whole different ballgame. Now you just walk up and get the cash. And your children, if they're younger, think that's all you have to do. If you want money, go up and throw the plastic in there and you have more money. Look for ways to conserve. I won't get into that too much. Use charge cards for convenience and pay off within the time period. If you have a credit card balance and you don't have the funds, either in your checking or your savings, to pay off your balance, that means that you are spending more than you're earning. That's a red flag. You need to work on that and rectify that. Don't make hurried decisions. Always wait if you're unsure. I've counseled people who've gotten into timeshares. They get into timeshares, not that they're bad, they're better than they used to be, actually. They get into timeshares, but they can't afford the air flight to go to the timeshare, and it just sits. Just had someone yesterday at a wedding at church trying to get rid of their timeshare. In fact, they never use it. And it's in Las Vegas. They didn't want to go to Las Vegas. It's like, well, you know, I know you can trade around, but it's like that was the way it was set up. Then he was saying, you know, I have to get rid of this thing because if I die, my children will have to then pay the fees for all that. It says, well, they can disinherit it. You don't really have to do that. But and just give it back to the company. But it's a problem. I've seen people, I remember counseling someone, and they always had budgetary issues. And they go out and they buy one of these packages where you get food every week, you order the food, and you buy the refrigerator. You know, one of these lift-up freezers, I think it was. And they sell you all this food at premium prices. And I remember the guy saying to me, well, I was tired of not having food in the freezer. It's like, okay, well, this did not resolve the problem. Okay, now you have the freezer you paid $1,800 for at 20% interest, and you got this expensive food. So somehow they get out of it. And then when you can't afford it, when it's not in the budget, that's hard to do sometimes. Seek counsel when it's needed. In a multitude of counselors, there is wisdom, there is safety. And allow for breathing room. We'll get into it a little bit in the formulation of the budget itself, but most people don't have breathing room. And if you're a Christian, there's other Christian requirements that you have. Go to the next page, development or creating a budget. Proverbs 27:23-24, be diligent to know the state of thy flocks and look well to thy herds. For riches are not forever, and doth the crown endure to every generation. You can't presume that you'll have today, tomorrow, what you have today. Have three men in our church. Friday got laid off from a car dealership that's closing. They were all working for the same car dealership. Just out of work because of the nature of the industry. Number one, participation by both spouses. How can one abide to a budget if it's not written and know what the intention of the other party is? For a couple, I'd say it has to be a written budget. You need to pray and seek God's will and have peace about what you're coming up with. You need to plan. You need to have a purposeful attitude to reflect good stewardship. It's an act of obedience. Stewardship is not something you need, but something you do. It's a requirement. And it's not about raising money for the church, but it's about raising Christians. It's a form of spiritual growth. It's a management of the Lord's resources, because it's really not your money anyway, although we act like it is. As soon as we buy something, we put our name on it. Specific steps of a budget. Summarize your spending for the last year, because your checkbook will tell a story as to where your priorities are, and those priorities and those expenditures will tell you where your heart really is, too. List all your income sources. You need to know what they are, because if you don't annotate them, you don't know what they are. I had a lady come into my office one time, we were counseling, and And she worked for U.S. Healthcare at the time. Used to be U.S. Healthcare, now it's Aetna. She had a good job. And she was going to work for a law firm. She was administrative assistant, secretary. It's like, okay, let's go through the situation. I had some budgetary issues. And it's like, okay, how much are you going to make in a new job? I'm not sure. How much are you making in your old job? I'm not sure. It's like, how could you take a job? You don't know what you're making. And you don't know what you're going to make. Well, she wasn't there very long. Establish in order your tithes. Don't rob God. That should come first. Your taxes. Don't cheat your uncle. And your savings. Don't forget to pay yourself. I had a boss, a lost guy, high school. He'd give me my paycheck. Pay yourself first. I didn't listen to him, but at least he told me that. This determines your standard of living, and this is exactly where Christians get into trouble. Not just Christians. Everybody does, because they're trying to keep up with somebody else. We do it all backwards as Christians, because you have to remember something. When you go buy a home, the mortgage company or the banker will tell you that you can afford, your mortgage should be 32 to 35% of your gross income. It's like, well, not if you're a tither. It's not going to happen. Let's take $5,000. Let's say your total taxes are 30%. Social Security, state, federal, local, that's your sort of your average rate, 25, 30%. Okay. For $5,000 with a 30% tax rate, how much does it take to have $5,000 net? Well, you need to earn $7,142. Take the inverse 30%, which is 70. 70%, 5,000 divided by 70% is 7142. I have to earn 7142 to come up with 5. So you got the tax element in there. But it doesn't count tithes. Or if you have your children in Christian school, it doesn't count those expenditures. If you listen to the bankers and the mortgage type people, and you can see who listened to them a year or two ago and who's in the mess right now. But if you listen to those people and they try to sell you any kind of mortgage at 22, 32, or 35%, you're going to have a problem. Or if they tell you you can afford even more than that because we'll do an interest-only loan for a few years, well, now, or in subprime loans, now there's a bigger problem. And there's millions of people who've lost their homes already. And they're in the process of foreclosure. And now we have to have tax laws to bail those people out, which is going to cost you additional taxes to do that. But anyway, that's where the problem lies. And when you go through the budget, you have to come up with your income and your expenditures, and you have to factor in the Christian stuff. I mean, how about the tithes? How about the offerings? Special things. I know, being part of a church, there's always special offerings. There's needs of people that you see that you want to help meet. Those things don't get factored in into a lost, unsaved person's budget. And from that point, then, you have to list and allocate all the expense categories and balance the budget from that point. You really have to make sure that your standard of living, and if you're younger, the earlier you do it, the better. If you're in the process of buying your first home, you really have to go through this process or you're going to be in trouble and over your head for a long time, because it's not easy to get rid of a home. If you bought a home a few years ago and want to sell it today, you're not going to be able to sell it for what you paid for it, most likely. There are some exceptions. So it's not easy to get out of a car loan. It's not easy to get out of a mortgage or a house. Once you're in a situation, and oftentimes, and we have it in here, change your standard of living. Sometimes that's impossible without going through foreclosure, without going through bankruptcy. You don't want to put yourself in that situation. Maintenance of a budget. Ensure that both agree. Understand and commit to a budget. Set a time together periodically to pay the bills, reconcile bank accounts, review your budget, make adjustments, file the information. I just suggest you take manila folders and put every vendor that you have in a manila folder for the year. Not have them scattered and disorganized. Manila folders, you can buy 100 of them for $4. Okay? Just do that every year and have an organized way of doing your budget. But I really believe that if it's a married couple, that they have to do something together. I've had people say, I don't know how to reconcile a bank account. Or, I'm not good with bills. I can't write out checks. No, they can when they really want to spend something, but if you know none of that, if you just sit and do it together, if all you can do is lick the stamps, you don't have to lick them now. They peel off. Anybody can't peel off stamps? As long as you're involved in the process, you're going to know what's in that account whether we're under, whether we're over, just the awareness of being together will be a tremendous asset in your personal finances. You have to be involved. Set a time periodically at payday or the end of the month or every 2 weeks, however you get paid. Maybe try to coordinate it with an enjoyable time. Okay, we're going to have pizza night. If you haven't fought too much, we'll have pizza night afterwards. Maybe throwing pizza at each other, but, you know, until you really get straightened out. I remember years ago when I was lost, it's like my wife would make a transposition. You know, you reverse two numbers, and it's like you're looking for this. But you didn't make a transposition. Transpositions are easy to find because you reverse two numbers, the difference is divisible by 9. So if you come up with a difference that's not divisible by 9, it's harder to find. And it's like, I would just pick on her. It's like, you made this mistake. Now, when I made a mistake, I just don't let her know. That's just who I was. But you need to get to the point, and it will happen, where it can be an enjoyable time. And that you match your duties with the respective abilities. But if one of the parties is not good at anything, they can write out envelopes, they can put the stamps on, but you're conversing and you still have more knowledge at that point as to what's going on than if one person handles it completely. It's not good. I've seen particularly husbands die, and their wife knows nothing about the finances. Now, sometimes it's just the opposite, and they are just left in a quandary. They don't know what to do. I've helped many people. It's just unbelievable. They're completely lost when it comes to the finances when the husband dies. That shouldn't be. Just had someone who donated $1 million to our seminary. Now, you think we're rich now because of $1 million. Believe me, we're not. Big church, big bills. Donated $1 million to our seminary. They were not a member of our church. Had a lot of money. His wife has no idea. He has a townhouse development with 84 townhouses. She has no idea what's going on. And he had cancer up in maybe for 8 months. And they were supposed to sit down, and he was supposed to educate her as to what really. She has no clue. So now she's relying on attorneys, you know, at $250 or $300 an hour to be able to help her out. And we're trying to help as well, obviously. But it's a shame that those things happen. Whether you have a little money, whether you have a lot of money, there needs to be some communication between the spouses. So if your husband in business, you should know something about your husband's business. The fact is, it's your business too. It's God's business too. Okay. So you need to have that coordination time. You need to establish a dollar limit for unbudget expenditures to require discussion. For instance, we don't spend money that's not in the budget if it's more than $25 or $50. And there should be a cushion so that you can do that periodically. But if there's no cushion, then you shouldn't even be doing that without discussion with the other spouse. Consider a computerized system, whether it's Quicken or MoneyWorks or the Larry Burkett program, the former late Larry Burkett, Crown Ministries, which I find to be more difficult. But you may want to use a computerized system. It just gives you a lot more information at year end in trying to be able to retrieve information and summarizing information than you would do in just a checkbook type thing. Establish a file system. It can be very simple. It doesn't have to be complicated. Just get a box or a cardboard box or a file cabinet and put 1 year's bills in there with a manila folder for every vendor. It makes it very easy. So when you're looking for information or trying to find out, well, did I really did pay this bill? They said I didn't pay it. It's just easy to find. It shouldn't be scattered throughout the house. Analyze and adjust the budget periodically as required. And be patient and maintain that patience with cash flow problems. The fact is, if you have financial problems, you didn't get into them overnight, and you're not going to get out of them overnight. So it requires extreme patience to be able to do that. So I'll make sure we get these budget sheets distributed to you, which I use in counseling, that I probably stole from Larry Burkett. I think I modified him a little bit, so that's what they do. What are the options for balancing a budget? There's not too many. Increase income, that's usually not the best way to do it. Because if you're spending too much now, if you make more money, you're going to spend more later as well. That usually is not a solution. Now, sometimes that's the only recommendation. Had a situation with a couple in church, both got divorced, remarried, both had kids. It was just a mess. And got saved, and, you know, it's just a mess. And the only option was, they had no options to cut expenses. They had support payments to make, court proceeding. It's just a horrible situation. And the only recommendation there was, you need to go get a part-time job. That's the only way out of it. And pray a lot. Because the Lord can bail you out of that. And they're doing their best, trying to be good Christians at this point, turn their life around. But they made some horrible decisions on the way. Decrease expenditures. Withdraw from savings. Got to have savings to be able to withdraw from. And then borrow, which is the best method. B, usually. Actually, C would be better because that meant you had some savings to begin with. But nonetheless, I'd say B or C. Debt and credit. Having lost its value, money may no longer be the root of all evil. Credit has taken its place. I don't know who Dalton Camp is. I don't even know what Saturday Night Magazine is. So if you know what it is and it's offensive, sorry. But I never looked it up. Okay. Anyway, facts and statistics. I mean, we're deficit spenders because we have a good model, and that's our government. Okay? And I don't care if it's Republican or Democrat. I'm Republican. I'm not endorsing anybody because we don't want to get your church exemption revoked. But but I can tell you this. We get our habits from the government. Our tax laws have been geared towards you incurring debt and getting deductions for them. The recent tax law change of about a month ago, July 31st, is basically intended to bail out people who've made unwise decisions. It also gives some good tax credits for someone who wants to buy a home. If you have info, need info on that, you can get a $7,500 tax credit. If you buy a home between now and next June, you've got to pay that back over 15 years, but it's a pretty good deal. But the rest of us will pay for it. But if you're looking for a home, I'll throw that out to you. You should take advantage of that. But anyway, we follow the patterns of our government. We are a giving country. $300 billion a year is given to charities and churches. We also have a negative savings for the first time in 2007. It used to hover around 1% to 2%. Now it was negative, which means that the average American spends more than they earn. Personal bankruptcies are 1.2. In 1980, they were 1.2 per thousand. In 2004, they were 5.4 per thousand. In 2005, there were 2 million personal bankruptcies. At the end of 2005, and there was a rash of filings because the law was changing. In October 2005, a new law came into effect limiting the ability for certain persons to file bankruptcy. So the bankruptcies actually decreased from 2 million to 1 million, which they are. That's still a lot of bankruptcies. If you want an education, go down to the federal courthouse in Philadelphia. I used to take seminary students down there and go to bankruptcy court. It's just amazing what people get away with. But when you look at, if I took a stack of $1,000 bills, $1 million would be 4 inches high. If I took a stack of $1,000 bills, $1 billion would be 300 feet high. If I took a stack of $1,000 bills, $1 trillion would be 63 miles high. I'm assuming I think it's clean money. Okay. When you look at the federal debt, our accumulated debt was $2.2 billion in 1932. 1970, it was $400 billion. 1988, it was $2 trillion. I love President Reagan, but that's where it started, and it's continued from that point. Right now, in August 2008, our federal debt is $9.6 trillion. It increases $1.86 billion a day. That means for every man, woman, and child in this country, that's $31,000 of debt per person. That the government has. And it's just staggering. So when you look at Tax Freedom Day, you know, you have to go into almost a third of the year to be able to satisfy all your federal, state, and local tax obligations. So we can't just keep printing more money, but we get our patterns from the government, and it's not good. And then we also get it from the lost world, and we take information from them, and we get ourselves into trouble as well. They're just some facts. Inflation produces a buy now mindset because prices will be higher tomorrow. Money is to be used, not spent. Love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. All kinds of evil is the intention there. And debt is bondage to someone or something. The borrower is servant to the lender, it says in Proverbs 22:7. Savings is freedom and anxiety, and debt is bondage to someone else. Getting into debt starts internally. When you start comparing yourselves to what others have, that really is easy for us to do. When you're focusing on what you don't have, start looking around. When you haven't prayerfully considered purchases, remember one time I bought it. It was a Buick. Neighbor around the corner, I went by. It looked real good shape. It was the worst car I ever bought. Probably because I didn't pray about it. That's what my wife said. It was $4,600. I figured, well, it was worth six. And this nice Mennonite family drove it, and he was selling it for his dad. It's like, well, how could I go wrong? It had like 60,000 miles. It was the worst car I ever bought. I guess I wasn't old enough to drive a Buick at the time. I think that was a punishment from God. I also didn't pray about it. That's my wife always says. I just talked about this other couples. Well, it wasn't a $20,000 or $25,000 car. It was $4,600, but it was a limit. But anyway, really didn't pray about it. When you don't have a plan, if it's in your head but not on paper, it's a problem. You need to have a budget. It manifests itself externally when you spend more than you earn. If you have a credit card balance, you spent more than you earn if you can't pay it off. When you use credit cards without paying the balance monthly, when you continually consolidate loans or equity lines, when you approach insolvency or enter bankruptcy, it affects your behavior and relationships. When you start relying on things for security, satisfaction, or identity, that is materialism. We'll talk about that in the morning service. There's also the opposite of that, which is relying on someone else for security, satisfaction, identity. That's when you save everything that you earn. I remember doing a tax return for someone, and actually the person lived up here somewhere. Had a good job. He was just a mechanic, like an airline mechanic. And never spent any money, never went on vacations. He just lived like a pauper, just this little row home somewhere up in this area. And he died. He had so many government bonds. I don't know. He had $400,000 or $500,000. It's like never did anything with his family. Hoarding money. It's just as bad as spending too much money. Because either way, you're relying on yourself, not God. And he instilled in his daughter who inherited the money the same thing. When you start arguing or lying about money or spending, that's a problem, just like an alcoholic. When you start compulsive purchasing because it makes you feel good, they always say the ladies go out and buy the dress or the shoes because they're depressed, but the guys will go do the same thing. When you go from managing to being anxious over money, when you fail to recognize you have a problem, like an alcoholic or a drug addict or a workaholic or the materialist. I want it now. I deserve it. I have the right. I worked hard all these years. Why do others have it and I don't? It's not fair. You can go through. You know, it's not fair. You know, adults, it's not fair. When your kids say it, you don't like it and you correct them. But we do the same thing. The emotional worry, the anxiety, the bondage you have from high debt, the relational issues with your spouse and others, the pressures that creates, and the spiritual issues. It further affects your relationship with God. But when you have financial problems, it's a spiritual issue to begin with. There's some spiritual issue there. And unless you've just inadvertently been laid off as part of the economy, there are other non-spiritual reasons why some people have financial problems. But oftentimes, if it's habitual, there's spiritual reasons there. Getting out of debt, some spiritual changes, you need to pray about it. And you need to believe that God can give you the answers. Matthew 21:22, when all things whatsoever you ask, you shall ask in prayer, believing you shall receive. But you need to do your part as well. You need to ask God for wisdom, ask Him to change your heart. You need to be obedient to God in your giving. This is a tough one. And you go through somebody's budget and like, there's no room to tithe. We'll talk later about what tithing is, actually tonight. But we'll use the term. We really, you know, the word grace givers, not tithers, but let's just say tithing. There's no room to tithe. So what do? You desire to be a biblical steward. You just do what's right. You need to have a willingness to make changes, including lifestyle changes, housing changes, auto changes. But sometimes you can't even do that. You're locked in, especially today. Determine needs from wants with a new look and God's perspective, not your own, not your brother's, not your co-workers. But that faith does require action. And we know that. Patience is faith's right arm. Consider a long-range plan. It will take time. Discipline. Suffering comes from freedom. Galatians 6:8-9. Let us not be weary in well-doing. In due season we shall reap if we faint not. But due season could be years. Now, you can get into financial trouble a lot quicker than you can get out of it. But there still is a time period. So you can't allow discouragement to get in. But if you don't make the change now, you'll never get out of it. It just gets worse. So you need to have perseverance. You can't give up, but you have to start. That reap and sow syndrome, it will take time. Whether it's financial difficulties, relational difficulties, marital difficulties, it's not going to change overnight. And you have to start sowing good seed to be able to reap good benefits. That's just the law of God. And then you need to learn to be content. Having food and raiment, let us therewith be content. I have learned that whatever state I am in, I need to learn to be content, as Paul said. That is one of the toughest things that Americans, maybe you should just go on a mission trip. Got a mission trip around here? Go on a mission trip. That might teach you to be content with what you have. It's just unbelievable. And then character changes. The recognition that you have a problem. The willingness and the desire to change is just a summary. Direction by counsel. You really need to be counseled if you have a problem. You need to sacrifice. You need to change things. There's some things you're not going to be able to have any longer that you had in the past. But ultimately, there will be a freedom, that ultimate result that God has now been working in your life. And it's without all the anxiety and the bondage that you had before. So you need to develop a written budget. But no plan is a plan. In a multitude of counselors, there is safety. So we're going to have to end soon. Bankruptcy, just a couple comments. I'll jump down now. Ben Franklin said, who said a lot of things, it's better to go to bed supperless than run in debt for breakfast. The Italians would actually, the word bankruptcy comes from bancarotta. They would come and break the tradesman's bench so he couldn't produce money anymore because they broke his equipment. So they probably were Sicilians. I'm Italian, so I could say that. Biblical considerations. Proverbs 37:21, the wicked borrow and pay it not again. I believe you made a commitment. You need to follow through on it. In only certain limited situations would I recommend bankruptcy. I think it's unbiblical. There are some Old Testament releases. Every 7 years, every 50 years, that's Old Testament. It's probably not our dispensation. I wouldn't rely on those as the biblical justification to go into bankruptcy. But there are some unusual situations where that's the only thing that you can do. But it really depends on which got you there as well. So if you need help, I know I'm going to be meeting with some people this afternoon. You can feel free to call me at the Summit Center. But hopefully that was some help to you. Let's pray. Father, we do thank you, Lord, for the opportunity to look into your word and to be able to see what you want in our lives. Lord, you want us to worship you. And you want us to glorify you with our lives. And that includes with the things that you lent us here on earth, those material things. So, Lord, help us to be able to do that in the way we live, in the way we spend, in the way we worship you. We thank you for it in Jesus' name. Amen.